are picking up the slack. There's no case to be ignored. Everyone, welcome back to another episode of Canadian Gamers. I'm here with Steven, as always, and we have nothing to talk about. No, I'm just kidding. We have a few things we're going to talk about, but first, just want to go over what Steven mentioned right before we did this, which is there's a lot of different ways for people to actually experience these podcasts. Now, we're posting them on YouTube. We have an alternative, an alternate channel, because for whatever reason, we have copyright issues all the time on the main COE YouTube channel, so we have another one that we opened up for videos sort of like this, all right? So if you're listening to this podcast via YouTube, awesome. If you're listening from Podomatic, awesome. If you're listening from iTunes or directly on the site, we just want to say thanks for the support, as always. And that's about it. Just wanted to round off all the different ways you could be enjoying our sexy voices. All right, so we're going to jump on in. The biggest news of the week happened, was yesterday or Monday night, something like that. I actually wasn't by the computer because my apartment is like a balmy 5,000 degrees. It's like being in the seventh ring of hell. And so I took off, went to some AC, the in-laws place, basically. And anyways, so some big news broke, which Ahmed was super awesome to post on the site, and I just updated all the information. So what the hell am I talking about? I am talking about the Microsoft Surface. Dun, dun, dun. This is quite an interesting tablet. I don't know, Steven, did you actually watch the conference, or you just read about it?
I just read about it, that's all. I don't know much about it, I just heard that it was like a tablet, plus it worked like a full laptop, and it also could, there was a model that could be like a pro PC, you could play games on it.
Okay, well, yeah, that's pretty well the gist of it. I'm going to run down just a few of the differences. Basically, what it is exactly like you said. They announced two different versions. I went back yesterday and actually watched the conference, and it's so funny how Microsoft, they always have issues with their software whenever they whenever they're at like big events like this. And I always feel bad for the guy that it happens to, because he must really be like, damn, this sucks. Because the first guy who showed the Surface, the very first thing he goes to do is simply like swiping, because there's different gestures you can do on it. Like for those of you who have an iOS device, if you bring your finger from the top of the screen down, you have like a tray that comes down. Well, there was something like that if you go from the left to the right of the screen, just like a little like gesture like that. With the Surface, you bring up like a, I don't know if it's another page because they didn't really show, or if it's the same sort of thing, like a little tray pops down, but whatever. The guy couldn't get it to work. He's like going and going and going. Then he's like, oh, excuse me, as he like runs down, grabs another unit and comes back out. I found that so awkward because the poor guy is like, it always happens to Microsoft, like every single time they're showing a Windows thing. But anyways, besides that funny little awkward moment, the rest was really, really badass, if I might say so myself. So what is the Surface? The Surface is essentially a tablet. So think of your iPad. It's the same idea. Difference being it's far more rectangular than the iPad. This is a true 16x9 layout. Okay, so it's rather thin and very long. So think of it like, I don't know how you would say this, but it's basically a rectangle. The really interesting feature with it is that it, I don't think it's going to come with this so-called keyboard case. I think you're going to be able to buy this separately, but what's really neat with it is that there's two keyboards available, and they're thin. I mean, they're like insanely thin. One is a touch keyboard, just like as you would touch on the screen, okay? But it's built right into the case itself, and it's only 3 millimeters thick. That's pretty amazing. And if you want the tactile keyboard, so one with actual keys that, you know, click as you type, That one is 5 millimeters, but again, it's designed as a case to protect your surface. I'm just going to say iPad. The other thing I really liked is it has a little kickstand in the back, which doesn't stick out. It doesn't intrude. It's built seamlessly right into the surface, which is really nice. So when you have something like this, basically you now have a tablet and you have a laptop. So if you're at a sitting like anywhere, you can just put it down, take out the kickstand, you know, so it will be like, I don't know, maybe what, maybe 120 degrees, the angle or something like that. And you'll have a full keyboard. I mean, what's not to like about that? In terms of specifications, there's the two models, like I said. One is going to be called the Surface, and the other one's going to be called the Surface Pro. I'm going to go over the basic one right now. Just going to list off some features straight up, okay? You've got the operating system is Windows RT, which is basically for the ARM architecture. It's sort of like a watered-down version of Windows 8. It would be like it's specifically designed for tablets, so it uses the Metro interface and what have you. The CPU is the NVIDIA Tegra ARM, which is exactly what I just said. The storage capacity, it's going to be available in two versions, either a 32 or a 64 gigabyte version. Both of them have micro SD slots, so you can put an SD expansion in there if you want. The display is a 10.6-inch clear type HD screen with 16:9 ratio, like I mentioned before. And the input for this particular model, you get the multi-touch screen, you have the touch cover, like I mentioned, but again, that doesn't mean that it's included. It's just saying that it's a different interface. And then you have the type cover. The touch cover is the one that I mentioned that is sort of like a screen. It's as if you were typing on your tablet right now, except that it's on the cover itself. And the type cover is the one that has the tactile keyboards that actually move. And the connectivity, you get a 2x2, well, basically the fastest Wi-Fi you can imagine. I'm not going to get into too much details on that. It also has USB 2.0 and micro HDMI, and it comes in at only 676 grams. So that one, Microsoft says, will be priced according to the tablet market. In other words, likely going to be in the 400 to 600 to 800 range, something like that. Okay, they didn't actually specify; they just said that it will be comparable to tablets on the market right now. And the second model, this is the one that really raised a lot of eyebrows and really made people go, "Well, now this is interesting." So, for the Surface Pro, you get the operating system is Windows 8 Pro, the real Windows 8 Pro, not like modified in any way, shape, or form. It's the real deal. The CPU, you get a quad-core Intel Core i5. And what's really badass about this is the new Ivy Bridge ones. This is not the Sandy Bridge. So this is the brand new ones that came out in April. The storage capacity for the Pro model is either 64 or 128 gigabytes. And, of course, you have that... I just noticed. You don't have a micro SD slot in this one. In this one, you have a micro SDXC slot, so for higher capacity. That's very interesting. Should also mention that the 128 gigabyte, I believe, is more than what the Retina display iPad has right now. If I'm not mistaken, it only goes up to 64, so that's interesting. The display is the exact same screen as was mentioned above. It's got the 10.6 clear type full HD with 16:9 ratio. Now, this is what's different. Listen to this. The input method, you get the multi-touch screen. You also have access to the touch cover, the type cover, but you also get the pen with palm block. That will not be available on the regular Surface. That will only be available on the Pro. And in terms of connectivity, you get the same dual band Wi-Fi, but instead of USB 2.0, you now get USB 3.0, and instead of a micro HDMI slot, you now get a mini display port. And because it is a significant boost in specs, the weight, instead of the 676 grams, is now 903 grams. Now, that's the version that you were mentioning, Stephen, that... It actually like plays PC games and what have you, but of course, I mean it's real Windows, so it's essentially a laptop that, except that it's in this new form factor. The only thing that's sort of scary with this one is that Microsoft said that it will be comparable to Ultrabooks on the market. Now, Ultrabooks typically start at the $1,000 to $1,200 range and go up from there. So that one is probably going to be a little bit pricey. And finally, to wrap this up, in terms of release date, the Surface, the basic model, is going to be available at launch with Windows 8 sometime later this fall. We don't have an exact date yet. And the Surface Pro, they said, will be available roughly 3 months later. So that is the Microsoft Surface. You need to talk now for at least 2 minutes so that I can take a swig.
Well, you pretty much covered everything there. I didn't know much about those. All that I found interesting, like I said, was that you could play, like, from what they tell, you could play pretty much high-end PC games. I'm not sure how long that it will stay that way, but for what it seemed, it seemed like a pretty decent system for somebody that wants a tablet and also wants to take advantage of it to play games that besides Angry Birds and all that stuff. For me, another interesting aspect also will be how it will use Smart Glass, which Microsoft talked about during their press conference. For me, however, I just bought an iPad, so I'm not. It's not really something that will be in my interest right away. Also, I'm a bit concerned about the price. iPads are not really cheap to begin with, and I can't really see how this this new tablet will go. Will sell below, like you said, $1,200. Will probably be higher than that. So it's going to be an interesting market they're going to be after.
Yeah, I fully agree. And, I mean, I don't know, when they say, like, real games and stuff like that, well, we have no way of knowing, you know? Like, I mean, a lot is going to depend on what kind of RAM is in this thing and also what kind of, like, actual video card, which I don't think there will be a video card at all. I think it'll just be, you know, built right onto the motherboard. But whatever, the main point to get across there is that you will be able to play true traditional PC games via Steam and stuff like that. So that's pretty awesome right there. Oh, I forgot to mention that on the keyboard, you actually have a full trackpad. So that will be your mouse. Or I guess you could use, well, didn't mention if it has Bluetooth, but it does have USB. So you could always plug in a mouse, I'm assuming, if it's using the regular version of Windows. But the thing that made me, personally, the most interested of all of this, I'm not really in the market for a new tablet right now, but like you said, I'm very interested to see what they do with Smart Glass, because this is the perfect opportunity for Microsoft to sort of come in and be like, well, you know what, guys, we're going to do our own thing with our tablet, and we're going to like enhance it with this, that, and the other thing. It gives real big potential here. But I'm shocked to see Microsoft enter in the hardware like sort of race, because what people fail to realize is that because they're a software company, right? They have basically tons of manufacturers, well, basically all manufacturers license Windows from them. So for like say, oh, I don't know, Asus or Toshiba or Samsung or you name it, anyone that's going to make a tablet, if they're going to want to put the Metro version of Windows 8 on their tablet, and, you know, they got to license that from Microsoft, and then if Microsoft comes out and sort of shortchanges all of those guys by saying, well, you know what, we're going to lower our tablet by $150 compared to yours, that could really tick off all those different manufacturers, because they could say, well, look, you douchebags, we can't do that because we have to pay you to license Windows, so we can't, you know, lower our costs as much as you guys can. And I can see that potentially being an issue down the road. Right now, what are they going to do, right? Microsoft has monopolized the whole PC industry, so it's not like they could go somewhere else. But I will say that, depending on what happens in the next few years with this interesting product, you might see some ramifications of this later on when Google finally gets their act together with their Chrome operating system that is supposed to work like cross-platform on any device. So I think this story is far from over, and I think this is going to be really interesting moving forward, see what happens.
Yeah, for sure. You just went ahead and talked about a lot of techno babbles, so I'm just going to let you continue with the discussion.
That's awesome. That's really great. Okay, I'm just loading up the next little piece of information. Okay, before I switch over to Steven to give his big, amazing news that he has, I just want to just run down a few things that happened this morning, or yesterday, actually. Anyways, Okami, which was, or Okami, I never know how to pronounce it, which was that really unique wolf game that came out, played like Zelda, and it had this like brush technique thing that you could do on the PlayStation 2. Basically, it was an action-adventure game, or an action RPG, depending on how you look at it, that was released late in the life of the PlayStation 2, and sadly, it was really critically acclaimed, and everyone who played it in terms of fans and things like that seemed to love it. But it just never sold well at all. And eventually it was ported over to the Wii, which made sense considering the whole brush gameplay mechanic. It fit perfectly with the Wii remote. And now it's going to be coming out later this fall. It's exclusive to the PlayStation 3. It's going to be released via the PlayStation Network for $20. It's going to be fully remastered in HD, support 16x9 HD TVs, and it's going to support the Move controller, or you can play it with the standard DualShock 3 if you so prefer. We've got We've got a trailer up on the site. If you're interested in checking it out, go there. It looks pretty nice. And finally, the last little bit of information I have, last little ramblings or rumblings or whatever, is the fact that if you're a huge fan of Saints Row, prepare to be sad and happy simultaneously. Because new boss, Jason Rubin, he basically was looking at the new DLC, well, I guess you could call it an expansion for Saints Row 3. It was called Enter the Dominatrix. And when he saw like how far the developers, Volition, I think they're called, was willing to take the series, he sort of sat down with them and said, okay, look, guys, you know, our financials are in the toilet. We need another Saints Row because Saints Row is essentially the only thing keeping THQ afloat these days. So he told them, instead of focusing all your efforts on this DLC, why don't you turn that DLC into a brand new game? Like, what if I gave you more money, I gave you a larger team, could you pump out a game for, say, next Christmas? And that's exactly what they're doing now. So Enter the Dominatrix has been canceled, and it's going to be retrofitted as Saints Row 4 with a target release date of late 2013. And that's it. I'm out. I got nothing else to talk about.
Awesome. Well, I guess the bit of news I can talk about is they just released some info on Call of Duty Black Ops Declassified for the PlayStation Vita. And what we found out is pretty interesting, actually. It's not going to be like a traditional Call of Duty in the sense that you're going to have a campaign, but it's going to be more like Unit 13, the game you reviewed, where it's going to be basically Spec Ops missions, like just little missions that you can do either by yourself or with friends and all that jazz. Plus, it's going to have, of course, a multiplayer mode, though not much is known yet on that one. I'm pretty hopeful that it's going to be pretty close to the console experience. The only sad part is that, like Uncharted Golden Abyss, it's going to have a price mark of $49.96, so about $50, which makes it for a pretty expensive handheld game.
Yeah, that's a little yowzer. That's a little pricey. Unit 13, though, wasn't bad. It just suffered from a few things here, there, and everywhere. If Activision's smart and they decide to go that route, which is what you said they just announced, hopefully that online multiplayer is, like, built in from the ground up, which I'm assuming. And I hope it's not just, like, you know... Well, you said that it was multiplayer in... Like, did they mention if it was multiplayer in the Spec Ops, or is it only online, like, a separate online multiplayer?
I'm assuming that both.
Okay, good. Excellent. Because that was the big thing I didn't like with Unit 13, was the fact that, yeah, you had multiplayer modes, but the multiplayer modes were you're you know, your generic, typical stuff, which was fun. It was all right. But in the missions, it would have been fantastic to have, like, co-op. And if Call of Duty has that, then right there, that should be leagues better than the other one. What I'm not liking, of course, is that price. That's kind of ouch. And $50 for a portable game, I don't know. I mean, if anything, look at what's happening in the industry right now. The prices of portable stuff is going down. So, I'm not so sure about that price.
Yeah. It's really hard sell when you basically charge $60 for Call of Duty Black Ops 2, and then for $50 you get I call it the watered down version. It's going to be a totally different game. It's probably going to be an awesome portable game, but when you charge $50 for it, you're not expecting an awesome. You're expecting like the greatest game ever.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, to give
because Uncharted, there was the same problem with Uncharted, which was a fantastic portable game, but for $50,
it's
a bit of an issue. But like even Resident Evil Revelations originally was supposed to be $50. Mm-hmm. So, but I think like this won't last long because they're going to see that for the portable market, charging ridiculous prices like that are not going to be something you're going to get away with. Most people now buy games on iPhones and whatever for like a few bucks each. So stuff like that is something that they're going to have to move away if they want to be successful.
For sure. And sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. What I was trying to, what I just wanted to say was basically it's the equivalent of them saying, okay, Call of Duty Black Ops 2 is now going to be $70 on the PS3 and the Xbox 360. You know, like, you're expecting, well, then that's better not be just a good game. That better just be, like, you know, the best thing of all time. So you're absolutely right. That's exactly it. And you're right. That is ultimately what hurt Uncharted, because Uncharted was a great way to showcase the PS Vita's features and whatever. It wasn't the best one there, but they did a really good job. But it's the price. Like, yeah, that's really rough.
Yeah, and I think the other Vita news we can talk about is the sales in Japan. As you said, they got a pretty big boost this week thanks to Persona 4.
Yeah, they. Well, I don't have it. I closed the damn thing, but I think it basically what happened is the system still hasn't reached 3DS levels, but last week it was something like 13,000 units the system had moved. And this week it went almost up to 35,000. It was 35,000, basically 500. So that's pretty impressive. The 3DS
three times the last week's sales.
Yeah, exactly. And that proves what everyone has always said. You know, you kind of need software in order to move hardware. And like, you know, it's the first new game that's appealed to the market, at least in Japan, for quite some time now, because Persona 4, it debuted at 137,000 units were sold last week. So that's good. We'll see what happens. Meanwhile, the 3DS is still like kicking ass and taking names, because that week it sold about 62,000 units.
Yep. Oh, well.
Yeah, well, whatever. That's it. All right, so what about your big, your other news?
Well, I don't really have any other news. I just wanted to start a little feature here that I probably, like all features that I start, will only have like a one part and never a prequel. But I just want to talk about, again, about comic books. I just wanted to talk about origins of certain characters that were far different back then than they are right now. And the specific character I want to talk about today is the Incredible Hulk. Most people know him. He's a character that's very popular. You don't have to be a comic book fan to know who he is. And everybody always think of the Hulk as that big green guy that Bruce Banner turns into when he gets mad and stuff like that. He's pretty much invisible, runs very fast, is strong, and whatnot. And it's quite funny because I recently purchased the original Incredible Hulk run, which you're right, is only 6 issues. And it's not like that at all when he started. I'm quite curious to see when it changed and all that. But right now, the Hulk, when it starts, like the origin is the same. He gets hit by a gamma rays and whatnot. But what's funny is how his powers works. Now, back in the day, he actually turned into the Hulk at night and reversed into Bruce Banner at day. No matter what, it didn't matter if he was angry or not. Automatically, as soon as the darkness hits, he turned into the Hulk. And when the daylight came back, he turned back into Bruce Banner. Another thing that's pretty funny is that the Hulk is actually evil, and Bruce Banner is like, you know, it's kind of like the classic Dr. Jekyll and Hyde story that they're having, and Stan Lee admitted that that was his biggest inspiration for that character. But when Bruce Banner is Hulk, he actually wants to destroy humans and whatnot because humans fear him and stuff. So it's a pretty interesting twist. The now classic Hulk actually just wants to be left alone. He never tries to deliberately hurt humans and stuff like that. But in this case, it's quite the contrary. And yeah, that's what I wanted to talk about. I found it pretty strange that the Hulk is not actually at all the same Hulk we have today. Another funny thing is that this one almost seems to fly, too, because we all know that Superman back in the day didn't fly. He just leaped very, very high. And this is the same premise with the Hulk in this one. They write it like that, but the way it's drawn, it's completely different. They say that he's leaping, but when they draw it after, you can see that he can change direction in the air. And he also has his arms like the classic Christopher Reeve thingy where he's flying, and he can also move around, and you see it pretty clearly that that's not how leaping works. So it's almost confusing at times whether he actually flies or if he's leaping. So that's just what I wanted to talk about. I have a few others. I know that when I first read the original Spider-Man stories back in the day, I'm going to go back to very soon, and I found it very strange because he doesn't have the same powers at all as he does today. So it's just a little thing I want to talk about that I think some people might find interesting.
Well, if you really want to like blow your minds for who's listening here, go and check out the George Reeves 1950s Superman serials. By that I'm talking about the TV show. You can find it pretty well anywhere. And you're going to be blown away. You will be like, what the hell? Because Superman goes around beating the crap out of criminals and stuff like that. And that's the way it was back then. Like, if he needed information, he would, like, tie the person to a chair and beat them till they were almost dead. He would get the information he wanted. He wasn't this, like, poster child of, you know, truth, justice in the American way. And, I mean, he even killed people, which was, like, it blew my mind. I was like, what? I'm like, this is crazy.
Yeah, I actually read a few action comics, the original ones, and I saw him kill a few people in those too, so it's... But back in the day, though, everybody killed everybody in the comic books. Even Batman, in his first tales, didn't have any problem whatsoever with killing, so it's just how mentality changed, because if you read the comics too, it's during the Cold War and during World War II and World War, and there are a lot of racist comments.
Oh yes, for
like
sure.
That, like, they call it themselves the Reds or the Commies or the Japs, stuff like that. You always see like racist comments in the comics back in the old days. You just see how times change.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just racism. It's also very, like, they're all womanizers and stuff like that. Like, it's pretty...
Yeah, that too.
It's just, it's unreal. When you read it now, you're like, wow. Like, wow, this is pretty hardcore. But with Spider-Man always cracks me up because those original stories, it's so funny how weak the character actually was. Like, today, he can practically lift half the earth, but back then, like, he struggled to just lift a car would be, like, you know, something that would be awkward for him. But what always cracked me up was that one issue where aliens just show up, and it's like it's nothing. It's just like, you know, la la la, oh, look, there happen to be aliens in this garage or whatever it was. That always cracked me up. Like, it was just nothing. Today, there would be, you know, it'd be like all some, like, Skrull invasion or some BS like that. But that's what I liked about the comics back then. They were much more open, much more free, and it's fun to read those old books.
Yeah, I really, really like that because they're a lot simpler too. Because in those things, I know that I talked a bit about this and reading those, I might sound like I'm contradicting myself, but it's funny because anything can happen in those days. Like, if they needed, like, a character, it's simple. They would just do, like, I read the origin of Wonder Man, which is a pretty old, obscure character in the Marvel Universe. And that dude is pretty much invincible, and he was just created by a supervillain like that. Like, if these dudes can create, like, supervillains like this easily, like, why don't they do it, like, every single second and have an invisible army? But it's just so funny. And also, Stanley, I love the guy. He's created a lot of characters, but a lot of his explanations and his writing is pretty much goofy. He seemed to think that you can do anything with magnetism. Like, really, everything in his books have something to do with magnets. He basically does anything with that. You'd be surprised at what you can do with a magnet.
Yes, exactly. It's pretty amazing. And that's the perfect way to end this off. We can just say, there you go. It's amazing what you can do with magnets. Unless you want to chime in with anything else.
No.
Perfect. So there you go, folks. The moral of the story is that magnets can save your life or make you a superhero.
Indeed.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining us, as always. And like I said, no matter where you're watching us from, leave a comment. We always like to hear what you have to say about our stupidity. And that's about it. And go check out the new video I posted on YouTube. It's up at the site. It's just basically my Wii collection with a little surprise at the end. So thanks, and we'll be back very soon. Ciao.